This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 9 days from now, Senator Barack Obama will accept the Democratic Party nomination for president. By this point, we all know the bullet points of his biography. The son of a black father from Kenya and a white mother from Kansas, born in Hawaii, grew up there and in Indonesia, graduated from Columbia, law degree from Harvard, community organizer in Chicago, won election to the Illinois State Senate, drew acclaim for a speech to the Democratic Convention in 2004, and later that year, he was elected to the United States Senate. He launched a long-shot bid for the presidential nomination that caught the imagination of millions. But what do we know about character and beliefs and the events that shaped Barack Obama? Later in the program, the Econonaut returns to explain PPI and what today's inflation numbers really mean. But first, who is Barack Obama? We'll talk with people who know him from different stages of his life, and we want to hear your questions, not about his positions or his policies. You can find about those on his website. What do you want to know about the personality, the character, the beliefs of the man who would be the next president of the United States? On Thursday, we'll do a similar show about John McCain. Our telephone number, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin in Chicago. David Mendel has written a biography of the candidate, Obama, From Promise to Power. For the past 10 years, he's been a political reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and he joins us from the studios of member station WBEZ in Chicago. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And I guess we have to start at the beginning. And it's hard to believe that growing up a biracial kid raised by a single mother and his maternal grandparents is not enormously influential.
Yes, that's extremely influential. He is someone who I think uniquely understands both worlds, both black and white. He obviously is biracial, so he has one foot in each world. In seeking white votes as a politician, I think he understands some of the concerns that white people may have in electing a black politician. I think when he travels into the black community, having been a community organizer and spent a great deal of time in that world and having the physical appearance of a black man, that he has a unique understanding of some of the challenges and some of the institutional racism that may still exist to keep them in place. So I think that's one of his real positives as a politician.
How did he find an identity? You could understand having some difficulty there.
Sure. He went through a lot of identity issues when he was a teenager, particularly in Hawaii. And I think it was the exploration of his father's life that really helped him help galvanize who he is. Initially, we all have some identity issues, I suppose, as a teenager, trying to figure out where we fit into the world. But he's a very introspective man. There's no one who has studied Barack Obama more than he has studied himself. He has obviously spent years looking at the ancestry on both sides of his family. So I think in researching that and he really came to a real ease with himself. And I think surprisingly enough, despite his background, he is someone who really seems more as comfortable in his own skin as you can find.
It's interesting because you'd think somebody with a foot in both camps, as you describe it, could find himself comfortable in neither.
Yeah, I think he looks at both worlds and sees connections to both worlds. He's met so many people now, and his mother really imbued him with this, that we are all interconnected, that we have so many more similarities than we do differences. And he looks for those when he's talking to a farmer out in a rural area. He sees sort of the ancestry of his grandparents on the white side of his family. And so I think he feels like he's a little bit part of everywhere.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. This is Russell. Russell with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My question was very simple. During the campaign that I've been watching Barack Obama, and I have to admit that I do kind of admire the way he speaks, He speaks of only being African-American, and I'm listening to your speaker now talk about his biraciality and how he does talk a little bit about being his white side. My question is, doesn't he feel like he has a small identity crisis by claiming only to be African-American, the first African-American president, when technically he should be an other versus one or the other?
Well, technically he's both African, his father's from Kenya, and an American, his mother's from Kansas. It's a perfect descriptor.
Well, I agree with that. But once again, he was born in the U.S., and being both white and black, saying that he understands both sides of the coin, the only thing he's been speaking about in his campaigns that I've heard so far is, you know, I'll be the first African-American president, I am the first African-American speaker, and he is technically not only African-American.
Well, David Mendel, does this resonate with anything that you've uncovered in your time?
Well, I've never really heard him say, I'll be the first African-American president. What you're hearing is the media saying he'll be the first African-American president, the first black president. He certainly, I think he emphasizes just who he is as himself. He's run as much as possible, I think, a race-neutral campaign. So I wouldn't characterize him. I know he identifies himself as African American because of his physical appearance. When he walks into a room, you don't see the half white side of his family. He looks decidedly black. He looks African American. So that is how he has self identified himself over the years. But his friendships and his family certainly, I would say, predominate. Toward the white side. I mean, he has probably more white connections than he does African-American connections, simply because there are more white people in the United
States. Right. I don't disagree with you. See, I'm married to an African woman myself, but she's half Italian and half Eritrean. And unfortunately, she looks like she's Indian. She could be Mexican. She could be any kind of what you would call a light brown race, and he looks like that to me. And I think he would be probably perfect for exactly what we need to combine two races and get rid of what they call racism, even though I don't like that word. I like to use culturism.
Well, Russell, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Joining us now is Lisa Hay. She was a classmate of Barack Obama's at Harvard Law School and vied with him to be president of the prestigious Harvard Law Review. She, of course, lost in that contest. She's with us now from the studios of Oregon Public Radio in Portland. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And you, Barack Obama, and about, I guess, a dozen other people were proposed to be the next president of the Harvard Law Review. I guess it was back in 1990?
That's right.
And how Obama eventually won, the first African-American to be elected to that position. What was your impression of him at the time?
Well, Barack stood out at law school even the first year. I was in all of his first year classes because we were in the same section, and then again on law review with him for the second and third year. And he stood out not just because he was incredibly smart and articulate, because there are a lot of students like that. Mm-hmm. He was so persuasive, and you could tell when he was speaking, he really believed what he was saying. So I'd say he was just thoughtful and genuine. And there are a lot of law students who, in that first year especially, are trying out different theories and posturing and, you know, saying something they just learned in the class before. Barack wasn't like that. He was just very grounded, very sense of who he was. So it's interesting to hear what David Mandel said about how he developed his identity. And I think by the time he was 25 in law school, he really had a sense of who he was, and he used that grounding to establish his positions even in the law.
Would you say that he was consistent?
Yeah, he was consistent, not rigid, not one of these people who needed to find one theory to explain all of law. I think he was still exploring and questioning, but he was just thoughtful and also very confident without being arrogant, which was a nice combination.
Hmm. You might be the person to help us answer this next question. It's an email question from Sue in Wisconsin. She actually asked three. Is he forgiving? Does he have a good sense of humor? Does he take himself too seriously?
Well, I'd say he does have a good sense of humor. He used that a lot on the law review just because we had a pretty divided class of people on the review. There were arch conservatives and then some very liberal, radical even people. And lawyers, of course, like arguing. And Barack had to jump into that all of the time. And he was very level-headed and had good judgment. I didn't see him have to forgive anyone, but I would think he's forgiving. I do remember there was a debate that just went on and on about a certain footnote of an article we were going to publish. And you wouldn't believe that a footnote could be political, but it was. And
of course.
It just just over and over in the break room, it would come up again. What was the citation format going to be of this footnote? And Barack finally said, folks, remember, nobody reads this. And that kind of just reminded us to keep it in perspective, that it's just a footnote. It's not the biggest thing in the world. And he was able to do that in a lot of ways, to keep things in perspective and try to get people to focus on what is important.
So it sounds like he was comfortable in a leadership role as well.
Yes, he was. He was the obvious choice. Of course, I ran against him for president. So did about a dozen other people. And he was always the obvious choice. He just had a way, a charisma, a sense of who he was that caused people to admire him and also feel that he understood them. And I think that's one of his strengths, is that he does try to understand the position that people are coming from and why they have the point of view they do. He's not trying to be all things to all people, but he is trying to understand why people have the positions they do. And that made him a great leader for the review.
David Mendel, let me ask you. Some people are wondering how the son of a single parent from Hawaii and via Indonesia, Jakarta, got into Columbia College and then on to Harvard Law.
Well, it is a fascinating biography. He actually traveled first to Los Angeles and went to Occidental College. And he basically followed a girl there. He had an attraction to a girl, and he was a little unfocused in high school. He wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do with his life, and she went to Occidental, so he followed her there. And after a couple of years there, some professors really took him under their wing. They saw a great deal of promise in him, and he has a very restless soul, and this comes from his mother's side of the family. And so he wanted to experience New York. And so they recommended him for the program, a sharing program with Occidental at Columbia. And off he went to Columbia University.
And then a scholarship to Harvard Law.
That's right.
We're talking about Barack Obama, the man, just not the candidate, about the influences and the experiences that made him who he is. In a few minutes, we'll talk with an Illinois state senator who served across the aisle from Barack Obama in Springfield, Illinois, and we'll take your calls, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There are any number of resources with information on where each of the candidates stand on this issue or that. What's often missing is the context, who these men are, their influences, what makes them tick. On Thursday, we'll focus on Republican John McCain. Today, who is Barack Obama? What do you want to know? Not about his positions or his policies, but about his personality, the character, the beliefs of the man who would be the next president of the United States. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Our guests are David Mendel, the author of the book Obama, From Promise to Power, and Lisa Hay, who was one of Barack Obama's classmates at Harvard Law School. And Lisa, I've read that the president of the Harvard Law Review, of course, you ran against Barack Obama. He won, you didn't. But the president of Harvard Law Review has to make a big speech.
Right. There's a banquet each year, and the incoming president gives a speech. And Barack gave an incredible speech that year. I still remember the feeling of it, if not all the details. As you said, he was the first black president of the Law Review. And he used his speech to comment on that, but it wasn't a speech about him. It was a speech about how education and hard work and the work of good people coming together helps generations overcome the limits of their parents. It was really the same personal narrative we hear from him on the campaign today. Barack was always someone who believed in the promise of America, and it came out even there. And it was just the most moving speech I'd heard from any speaker at that age. And my husband was with me at the table, and after Barack's done, he kicks me under the table and says in a loud whisper, "It's a good thing you didn't win," meaning, you know, I'd like to think I've maybe improved my public speaking a little bit over the 20 years, but I'm no Barack Obama. It was just, of course, the gold star. Nobody gets to that level, even other presidents of the Harvard Law Review.
It's interesting. He would talk about education and the value of education to the class at Harvard Law. I mean, these are people who are the beneficiaries of one of the best educations in the world.
Right. Well, he was making a point that we were lucky to be where we were and that we didn't necessarily all get there just because we had worked hard, that many people had come before us to pave this way, and that our success at being at Harvard and his success at being at the first president of the Law Review was something that everybody could celebrate together because it was a work of common effort.
And how was it received?
It was very well received. The whole room, I think, I remember everybody applauding. It was a group of alumni plus the current class plus sometimes judges or professors or others are there. So it was a pretty big banquet hall. And then there were also waiters who would come in. People of color mostly were the waiters. And I noticed the whole room actually applauding him, including some of the waiters came in and walked down to the middle of the aisle to make sure they could shake his hand when he came off the stage because so many people of so many different backgrounds were moved by the speech.
Thanks very much for that story. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Lisa Hay was a classmate of Barack Obama at Harvard Law School. She's now an assistant federal public defender and joined us from the studios of Oregon Public Radio in Portland. Here's an email question from Jane in Baltimore. I've listened to right-wing radio and TV who keep saying that Obama gets all of his thoughts from William Ayers and Reverend Wright. What's the relationship with each man? David Mendel, can you help us out there? William Ayers, of course, the former weatherman.
Right. He was they were cordial with each other. Ayers gave him some campaign donations in the Hyde Park neighborhood of Chicago. You know, Hyde Park is full of radicals and mixed race couples and intellectuals. And Ayers taught at the University of Chicago. And he was not in any way a close advisor to Obama. He was someone who they chatted with. On occasion, going to in political circles, but they weren't very close. Now, Reverend Wright was a very close counselor to Obama. He is the man who helped shepherd Obama into Christianity, and they had very intense and long discussions about becoming a Christian. Obama becoming a Christian and joining the Trinity United Church of Christ, and. Over the years, I think Reverend Wright is one of these folks that you find throughout Obama's life who served as something of a father figure to him. Obviously, his father was absent through his life, so you see a sort of a sequential series of older men who sometimes take Obama under their wing and help him along the way, and Reverend Wright was one of them.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line, and let's go to Carol. Carol with us from Pleasantville in California.
Hi.
Hi.
I knew Barack in a few different capacities. Let me tell you a couple of things about me. I am a white woman who worked for many years in a General Motors factory and was president of a UAW local. And then I was hired by Service Employees International Union, and I was a lobbyist in Springfield when Barack was a state legislator. So I knew him as a state senator and also as somebody who lived in the same neighborhood, so as a neighbor and kind of a friend. He had a lot of friends, a lot of people who knew Barack felt like he was a friend because he was such a kind and thoughtful and a person who listened and always made you feel like he was, you know, a friend and somebody who was concerned about what you thought. I had experience with him when he disagreed with me a couple of times and the unions a couple of times, and also then with some people who did juvenile justice a couple of times. And he had very principled reasons for disagreeing. And even though we were supporters and so on, by and large, he supports working people and working class issues and so on. But when he did disagree, he was always clear about it and not, he didn't duck you, he didn't duck the question. He would explain his disagreement in a very principled way so that you could understand why he was doing what he was doing.
Carol, that's very interesting. You, of course, he was in the Illinois State Senate at the time, and that was his next stop. I wonder, did you ever lobby State Senator Dan Rutherford?
I didn't know him very well.
Okay, that's all right, Carol. Thanks very much.
Can I tell you one more thing?
If you keep it quick, if you would.
All right. A lot of people in Chicago know Bill Ayers and have a lot of respect for him, so... Just wanted to say that, too.
Okay. Of course, Bill Ayers also has, we mentioned, a member of the Weather Underground at one time and involved in radical politics. So
But since he has done tremendous work in education and is known for that quite widely, Mayor Daley said a nice thing in the Chicago Tribune about him. So,
Carol, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. We mentioned Dan Rutherford. He's an Illinois state senator and worked with Barack Obama during his time in the state Senate there. He joins us on the phone from his office in Springfield, the capital of Illinois. Nice to have you on the program today.
Neil, thank you. It's good to be with you this afternoon.
And what did you think of Barack Obama the first time he walked into the Illinois state Senate?
Well, he was a tall, affable, very presentable. And, you know, in the business of politics, and especially at the state capitol, and particularly in the Senate, there's dress codes and coats and ties and business suits in the Senate. But Barack also seemed to have the air of confidence, carried himself well, and knew that he was in control of his surroundings. And that was pretty obvious just looking at him and how he dealt with people.
And, of course, the Democrats at that time in Illinois were very much in the minority.
Well, when he first came in, they were. And then later, they went into the majority party. And that's really when I got to work with Barack more so. In fact, when they went into the majority party, they switched office suites. In fact, I am right now literally sitting in the office suite making the phone call from my office, which used to be Barack Obama's, before he moved over to the majority party. And I say this kind of jokingly, and so I opened the desk drawer thinking, as any successor would, they would leave the letter for the new guy. Well, I didn't find a letter from Barack. So hopefully if he becomes a president, Bush will leave him that letter in the Oval White House.
But someday there might be a plaque outside your office.
Well, you never know, Neil.
You never know. Well, what was he like to work with? Was he happy working across the aisle?
He was. And let me kind of put it in perspective a bit of who I am. I'm a state senator from central Illinois, Republican, conservative, representing primarily a rural area, but, you know, very, very attuned to the urban and work closely with many issues in the urban area. But and one thing in particular I think of, Barack became as the majority party, became the chairman of the, I don't remember the exact title of the committee, whether it's public health or health and services, something like that. And there was a piece of legislation that I was working on that really started because of an effect in the rural area, and it was assigned to Barack's committee. And the thing I thought was interesting was that he quickly looked at it and realized the impact that it would have on the urban areas as well. And as our debate continued, or friendly dialogue continued, it became something that he saw not as just important for rural Illinois, but also as important for urban Illinois. And by the time we got done with the committee hearing, he was very embracing of it, you know, was supportive of it. In fact, he even said, Senator Rutherford, I'd like to go on as a co-sponsor with you of the bill. So, I mean, that's kind of, I think, a characteristic of a man who had the ability to look at things in the grander scale and what they could be.
Now let's get Helen on the line, and Helen is with us from Wellfleet in Massachusetts.
Hi. We've heard repeatedly about Obama's vote against engaging in the Iraq war. I'm interested, and I've heard this nowhere, how has he voted on other issues, and what political compromises has he made during his rise? I'm going to vote for the guy. He sounds good to me, but what votes has he not shown up for? I think his voting record will tell us more about who he is, as it might impact us if he is elected president, than really anything personal we might learn about him. People can say anything, and their stories are, in the end, most people's stories are always compelling. But the votes are the real actions of people in politics. And why are we not hearing more about this?
Well, let's ask.
Answer off the air.
Oh, well, thanks for the call, Helen. We can deal with the greater part of Barack Obama's political career was in the Illinois State Senate. And Dan Rutherford, what did his votes tell you about him there?
Well, and I'm going to say this in the way, you know, kindly about a man that I have a great deal of respect for, but I do have some concern, having served in the Senate with him, and that we have, you know, you have the green vote for yes, the red button for no, and then you have the yellow button, which means you vote present, which means you're on the floor, but you really don't declare whether you're for or against a piece of legislation. And one of the things that I think is concerning is if somebody punches the yellow button too many times. And as you look back on Barack Obama's tenure within the Illinois State Senate, that was something that he did have a bit of a pattern at. And I don't want to try to read into it if it was because of, you know, conflict of interest, of which most senators, if they did, would stand on the Senate floor and say they're going to recuse themselves because of this. But it also says something that if one continues in a larger degree than most to vote present, that they really aren't making a declaration of where they stand on that specific issue. I think that's concerning. I would like to have my elected officials go to the state capitol and give me a yes or a no. Maybe I don't like it, but at least I know where they stand. And that's one thing. And that I know that is a, you know, and should be a sensitive thing about Barack's voting record. Now, to the nice lady that just called in with a question, I'm sure the McCain campaign will have done a complete analysis and point out where he stands on certain issues. I'm not prepared to do that, but I think one needs to take a position, and unfortunately, I think there's been too many yellow buttons from Barack's tenure than what I would say perhaps even most of the Illinois state senators did do.
Though at least we read that it was a common practice in the state senate to vote present a lot of the time.
Well, I mean it depends on who's giving you the answer to that, though, Neil. Common practice, when you look at the board, it's not a common practice unless you have a very specific reason of a conflict of interest. Then it's understandable. And I don't see that having happened. And again, I'm not doing this in a disparaging way. I'm doing it in a way of an observation of a man who stood there on the Senate floor and looked at the board and saw 59 lights go up there. And when you saw a seemingly frequency of yellow, it does cause you to take pause.
I suspect you're going to vote for John McCain come Election Day as a Republican. But if Barack Obama were to be elected president, would you be comfortable with that?
I would be comfortable in the fact that I know Barack Obama. It would be nice to have someone that I served with as the presidency of the United States. And put this in perspective, I was the state chairman for Mitt Romney in the state of Illinois, and I was actually elected in the state that John McCain won. I am a Romney delegate to the national convention. I've declared that I will vote for John McCain. And when I go in the ballot box in November, I will be voting for John McCain. I say this once again with kindness to a man that I served with. I would feel better knowing that John McCain was the president of the United States.
Dan Rutherford, thanks very much for your time.
Neil, thank you for having me on the air.
Dan Rutherford, Illinois State Senator who represents the 53rd District. He joined us on the phone from his office, previously Barack Obama's office in Springfield. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And David Mendel, let me ask you, it was a very curious way that Barack Obama got elected to the Illinois State Senate. In fact, he was a first-time office, running for office for the very first time against absolutely no opposition.
That's correct, Neil. The woman who held that seat decided that she was going to run for the U.S. Congress. And they cut a deal behind the scenes that he would sort of be the heir apparent. She would endorse him, and he would succeed her. But what happened is her congressional campaign did not go so well, and she decided that she wanted to come back and run for that seat again.
Her
old seat. She wanted to retain it. But Obama at this point had a campaign operation put together. He had his mind set that he was going to become a state senator. This was his entrance into politics. It's the reason he came back from Harvard to get into politics in Chicago. So what he did is he challenged her petitions, her nominating petitions. She didn't really have the time to go out and get these thousands of signatures that were necessary to put herself forward as
on the ballot, yeah,
right on the ballot. And it was quite obvious that they were improper. A lot of the signatures were just not signatures; they were printed, and they looked like they were printed all by the same person. And so he really labored over whether he should do this or not, whether he should knock her off the ballot in this way. He knew that if he challenged the petitions that she would get knocked off. So in fairness, he challenged all the candidates in that race, and they all their petitions wound up being invalidated except for his. And so he sort of snuck in a little bit on a technicality, although here in Illinois that's not even really a minor misdemeanor.
Interestingly, then when he runs for United States Senate, the man thought to be the strongest candidate against him withdrew in the midst of a divorce and a sex scandal. And then there was essentially nobody to run against him. Alan Keyes came in from Maryland,
right,
and ran against him. But Barack Obama romped to victory. Effectively, he's never run against anybody, a real challenger, until Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's true. He's never run against a real Republican challenger. He did win the Democratic nomination here in Chicago for the U.S. Senate, and that was his real tough contest. And of course, besides the Hillary Clinton contest, but he's never run against a Republican. So, against a Republican who is viable. So this is new to him. So we'll just have to see how it plays out down the road.
David Mendel, thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me, Neil.
David Mendel, the author of Obama: From Promise to Power. He worked as a political reporter for the Chicago Tribune for many years and joined us today from the studios of Chicago Public Radio at WBEZ, our member station in the Windy City. Up next, the Econonaut explains inflation. Adam Davidson tells us what to make of the latest round of gloomy economic numbers released earlier today and what PPI means to you. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.